Welcome to Medicus, a student-run podcast about any and all things in the world of medicine. Follow along as we interview outstanding individuals about important topics in healthcare.
Hello, Medicus podcast listeners. This is your host, John Engelbert, coming at you with another episode this summer. I hope all of you are enjoying your summer as much as I am. Before beginning our conversation, I just want to let our listeners know that this podcast contains ideas of sexual assault and other sensitive material. So just as a trigger warning before we begin, without further ado, let's get into the podcast. So we have here Maureen Kerr. Our guest is a nurse at the emergency department at Glenbrook Hospital in Glenview, Illinois. But she also works as a SANE nurse, a niche part of healthcare that many people don't often know about. SANEs is a certification that certain nurses can get through a course that stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. Maureen, tell me what inspired you, first of all, to become a nurse and how your journey looked from school to where we are now.
Okay, so what inspired me to be a nurse was my interest in science and the human body, and then also taking care of people from a clinical standpoint. And also the college I went to had a really good nursing school. So I graduated school from Creighton University, and in 2019, I started working in the emergency room at Glenbrook, and I've been there ever since. And then in 2020, I was given the opportunity to go to the didactic training that they do to certify you as a SANE nurse, which is, a sexual assault nurse examiner.
So what interests you in becoming a SANE nurse?
Well, in the ER, basically they give you a two-hour training on how to complete a medical forensic exam. That's what the SANE nurse does. And you don't get much training, and it's a very complex assessment and documentation, and everything takes quite a bit of time. So I thought it was just a smart decision to get the certification and really become an expert in it, just from like what I was going to have to do in the ER standpoint. And then also, it's just a really important job to correctly take care of survivors.
So you're saying that any nurse can do this exam, but to really be an expert in it, you have to get the certification, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, you hold a position as you're strictly working as a SANE nurse, right?
Yeah, so any ER nurse or also other clinical areas like labor and delivery, ICU, pretty much anything that involves reproductive health, you can be asked to complete or take care of a sexual assault patient. So in the ER, I knew I was going to have to do that regardless. So with that, and then the combination of like just being passionate about helping that population, felt like the right thing to do. And after doing it, it definitely was the right thing to do, because now I feel very competent in taking care of those patients.
Hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it takes to become a SANE nurse?
So the training that I received was a 40-hour didactic training, and I did this all during COVID. So it was online, a virtual course, but it's 40 hours of just learning the knowledge and the information behind the legal standpoint and the assessment standpoint, the anatomy of all reproductive systems. And then after that, you have a year to complete a clinical training log. And that entails you have to do 15 successful speculum placements along with a few genital exams, male and female. You have to observe a court case and watch like a trial of sexual assault. And then there's a few other like specialty equipment trainings that you have to complete in order to be able to use things that go into forensic nursing. So that versus a 2-hour class just makes such a difference. That took me 2 years to complete.
Oh, wow.
Versus just the 2 hours that they offer, you just learn the basic information and then you get thrown into doing the entire medical forensic exam, which is basically when a patient presents to the ER or, you know, wherever they come and they say they've been sexually assaulted. And a medical forensic exam is basically two parts. It's like collecting DNA evidence, documenting injuries with photography and drawing, and then also the clinical part, like taking care of your patient and doing, you know, like STI prophylaxis and pregnancy stuff and caring for like pain that they're in. So that's what a medical forensic exam is, and that's what you're expected to complete. So just with all of that training, it's not only easier, but you can do a better job.
So you said it took 2 years to do all that, as in it took 2 years to get your actual qualification or certification?
Yeah, but it's also, it was tricky because it was during COVID. So a lot of the things they used to do, you know, like I had to wait to go into a gynecologist office because they weren't letting people in during the pandemic. So I couldn't get like the speculum, I couldn't get the training, and then the criminal trial, you're supposed to actually go to one and observe it, but I had to watch one on YouTube. But I think without COVID, it would take about a year.
Okay. So nurses can take certain courses and get qualified or get certain certifications for other things as well. One, how do they compare to getting a SANE certification? And two, do you have any other certifications?
The other ones that I have are like TNCC. I guess you wouldn't call that a certification, though. I think the only certification I have is the SANE nursing. But like in additional trainings that we go through, like TNCC and like ECRN to answer the radio and be a medical control to ambulances, those are like maybe a few weeks, a few days to get your certification, and then you're able to practice. But for SANE, first, when you complete all that I mentioned before, you send it to the Illinois SANE coordinator. She approves you, and then I have what's called my SANE AA. It's like SANE Adult Adolescent. You can do the same training for pediatric, and that would be a different certification. But I don't have that one. I just have Adult Adolescent. And then after you practice for a year or two with your SANE AA, you can sit for like a boards exam. And then you would get your SANE A. And that's like the ultimate expert level. And it takes a few years to acquire.
So this goes pretty far in terms of training and development.
Yes.
Of having your SANE
certification. Yeah, it's extremely complex and intense, and you're learning not even basic anatomy, you're learning like every single little part of all genitalia. You have to identify it all, you have to use, you know, the medical terminology, and you have to know that all so that if you're in court you can be an expert witness and present what you found and present the factual evidence that you were able to document during your exam.
That sounds very intense. Not many people, I don't think, for one, even know that SANE nurse is a thing, and two, what really goes into the forensics exam, because, you know, you see all this stuff on TV, how there's court cases about this stuff, and even on the news, but no one really thinks about who's doing the work, the often probably traumatizing work for many people.
Yeah, honestly, the first time I saw it was on an SVU episode where the nurse in the ER was, they obviously call it like a rape kit on TV and stuff, but we don't refer to it as that. And there's like an acronym in Illinois, it's called an iSpec kit. Essentially, it's a box full of swabs and items that you can collect DNA evidence with. And then that kit goes to a crime lab where they analyze the DNA, the swabs that you collected in your exam. And then, you know, they match that with the police report and the ongoing investigation, and the detectives work with the DNA to put together a court case and, you know, take the case to the court.
So when you're working as a SANE nurse, you're on call, correct?
Certain hospital systems have an on-call program where if you sign up for a certain amount of hours, like 8 or 10, and a sexual assault patient walks into the ER during that time, they would call you and you would complete the exam.
And so from there on, you are basically the front man in dealing with this sexual assault case, or are you collaborating with any other nurses or the physician or even police?
So yes, you're collaborating with physicians, police, pharmacy, nurses. Because I have my SANE AA, I'm able to complete the pelvic exam by myself. But, you know, if a SANE nurse isn't certified yet and they're doing the exam, you have to have a physician do it and you assist them, or they have to assist you. Like, there has to be an MD in the room. But you definitely work in collaboration with many, many people, and that sometimes makes it very complex because you're talking to social work, pharmacy, the police, the patient, obviously the patient's family members. And it can get pretty tricky. You can get stretched pretty thin, especially when your main focus is you're, you know, trying to be there for your patient. And it can be distracting to try and speak with all these people, but you have to.
Yeah, because, of course, the healthcare team's sole purpose should be the patient, especially with what they have just gone through and what they're continuing to go through. And so I can see that being such a muddy area in terms of how to appropriately approach the patient and tell them that you're about to do this pretty invasive exam after what they just went through. And so can you just tell me what it's like going through that? Maybe steps you take to be careful about it? And maybe tell us a little bit about trauma-informed care. Are you the expert in this capacity, or does the physician have an equal playing part in that sense? How much is the nurse, how much are you, and how much the social worker, how much do they play a part in trying to keep this idea of trauma-informed care at the top of their heads?
Everyone plays a very large part, and I think an exam wouldn't be able to be completed without all parties working together. Something to say about trauma-informed care is it's kind of like a framework of thinking, and there's not really one way to describe it. It's just kind of taking care of someone, not just on what they're telling you in the moment and how they're presenting to you at face level. You have to think about past, present, and just think about the person in a psychological, emotional, and physical way. So I feel like as healthcare providers, we get very caught up in the physical stuff and we're inclined to say, what hurts? Let me fix it. And with trauma-informed care, it's so much more about caring for that patient as like an emotional being and supporting them in that way. And I think when all these people work together, it can be so overwhelming for that patient because, you know, first the nurse comes in, the doctor comes in, you know, then pharmacy comes in, and they're all saying what happened. And that patient has to describe it 6 times. So one thing I recommend is for the nurse, whether it's a SANE nurse or just the nurse who's going to complete the exam, goes in with the doctor at the same time. And then you have the patient explain everything, you know, beginning to end, and then they don't have to say it again, because that can be really re-traumatizing. And another thing is that, you know, when we think of like the neurobiology of trauma, your memory can be changed. So you say one thing to the nurse and then you say another thing to the doctor. It can be viewed as conflicting stories, and then that's used in court to discredit the survivor, when really, like, we all know that trauma in an acute state, which it always is hyperacute because you're doing an exam after 7 days that the assault happened, it can be hard to recall events, and, you know, your body's still processing the shock that you went through, and you're trying to get back to kind of like homeostasis. So I think that just explaining the story once helps so much. Another thing that helps is like participation in the exam. You know, letting that patient do some parts that you would normally do, like, you know, they can swab themselves. You can give them back control that they didn't have, and that control can mean everything to them. Another thing is saying, can I put my stethoscope on your back? Instead of, I'm gonna put my stethoscope on your back. And like actually asking them, because that's also a big part of feeling in control and being able to give them back kind of something that they lost so aggressively. Just asking.
So would you say this idea of trauma-based care is a relatively newer topic, or has it always been around since you got into nursing? Do you see it maybe changing or evolving or becoming more prevalent?
I think it's definitely becoming more prevalent. It's also going to be a law soon that a sane nurse has to complete a medical forensic exam. So I think the idea of trauma-informed care, not only is it important in just regular patient care for all types, like physician, nurses, everyone, but specifically sexual assault, it's obviously pertinent. More recently, people have realized that sometimes you can't just fix what's right in front of you, like an injury or pain. There's so much more to a person, and healthcare requires diving into that emotional being.
I couldn't agree more. Like you said earlier, a lot of us, or at least a lot of providers, get caught up in sort of checking the box on a to-do list for what they have to, you know, do for their patient. And that idea of the human in front of you isn't exactly laid out in a spreadsheet or in an Epic in such a way that you can care for them as a person and not just a problem, as a symptom or a issue to resolve.
Yeah, exactly. I see that a lot in the ER just regularly. You know, we just want to find the problem and send them on their way. But sometimes that's just not how people work.
So on that topic, do you have any ideas or opinions on how physicians can practice trauma-informed care? And not only physicians, but any provider, whether it be a nurse or a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner. What are your thoughts on how any healthcare team can become better equipped at providing trauma-informed care?
Yeah, so there's lots of ways. So like I said before, just having them tell their story once. Well, I guess in general, if you think about every patient you're taking care of, there are things you can do. But specifically with a sexual assault patient, I think something that's really important is just having patience. You know, sometimes you're super busy, you have patients to see, but it means, and it just provides like an open environment for this patient to understand that they don't have to like rush and tell what's going on. They can take breaks if they need to, because sometimes it gets too overwhelming and, you know, you need a few minutes. And then in the same realm, just listening judgment-free, because a lot of times there's parts of the story that maybe you disagree with or maybe is alarming to you, but it's really important to make that patient feel safe and like that they can trust you. So having patience, listening judgment-free, like I said earlier, active participation, you know, let the patient get involved in your assessment. And then just being like fully transparent with them this is what today's going to look like. You know, this is my job. This is how I can support you. And then again, like asking rather than saying, I'm doing. Healthcare professionals get in that mindset of saying, you know, I'm going to put this tourniquet on. I'm going to put this blood pressure cuff on. And just a simple question of, you know, can I do this? Gives them the control. You know, they're safe.
Yeah. I can see that being something that not many people really put a thought to because, you know, what's wrong with someone just putting on a blood pressure cuff or listening to your lungs and your back. But there's so much that you have to be cognizant of. It's definitely requires a sense of delicacy.
Yeah, and all these little things, they just seem like little small things, but just kind of having that framework of trauma-informed care, all the little things add up to this patient, makes a difference in their healing process, even long-term. Because right away, they might not even process what we're saying, but, you know, as time goes on, they'll, I think, really appreciate the care that they were provided with.
I think maybe getting into that habit is such an important part of obviously being a sane nurse, but being really any nurse or any healthcare provider, because you never know what someone may have gone through before walking through those ER doors or whatever hospital bed they might be sitting in or the chair in front of you. If you don't mind me asking, have you ever felt any sort of that secondary traumatic stress? Do you react in such an empathetic way that you feel it yourself and you have to cope with it in such a way? I guess what I'm asking is, do you experience trauma yourself when caring for these patients and how do you cope with that?
Yeah, I think that it's really hard not to because, you know, you sit in a room with someone and they pour their trauma out to you and they're crying and you do kind of feel like you feel their feelings. Because how can you not when somebody is just rehashing everything that they just went through? And I think it helps them, though, to kind of just sit with them and listen and even just crying with them. I've done that before for sure. And it does, like, weigh heavy on the heart. You just have to check in with yourself after and just make sure you're processing the feelings and giving it the attention it needs, you know, not just like kind of forgetting about it because that's easy to do. And when you do like a few in a, say, a week or two in a day or just a high frequency, that's when you start to kind of move on quickly from, you know, what someone, something, you know, intensely messed up that someone just said to you. You just like bounce back from it quick and then later on, you're kind of like, that was really messed up and I should probably process those feelings. So I think just checking in with yourself and making sure to rehash in your own mind. And I think also the secondary trauma that we're talking about doesn't only apply to sane nurses. I think it applies to every single person involved in that patient's care. And so I think everyone could use that advice just to like check in with yourself after taking care of patients with very emotional cases.
Yeah, I hope that becomes a much more prevalent part of training in healthcare in general with providers because it's really essential. If you want to provide for your patient, you got to provide for yourself first.
Also, what reassures me when I'm, you know, trying to cope with those heavy emotions are just knowing that the care that I can provide to that patient is gonna make their healing process much better in the long run. And that's the best case scenario for them being in that position. Like what I can provide them is gonna help them out in more ways than one. And that makes me feel like it's worth it. And then the other thing that kind of gets really, every time after I do one, I think about something that I could have done better or something that I messed up or something that will possibly throw the case out. Like, it's very detail oriented, and I'm always stressing about if I completed everything correctly and did everything that I needed to do for that patient. And I think that weighs heavy on a lot of sane nurses after the fact, just kind of being like, did I complete everything I needed to do to the best of my ability?
Yeah. As opposed to your work in the ER, where you might have multiple patients in a row, your work as a sane nurse, oftentimes that's just one person and you have one goal. I can see that coming back and haunting a lot of sane nurses, in the sense that those questions about the questioning of their own duty and whether they did the best they did, see, almost seems inevitable.
Yeah, like sometimes if you miss a signature, they throw the whole case out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's just very vital, if that patient, you know, wants to move forward and press charges, that you cross all your T's and dot all your I's. Say you interview a patient primarily Spanish speaking, but speaks some English, and you do your whole exam in English, they can throw that away because you didn't use a translator.
In the court, you mean?
Yeah. Hmm. And in a sense, like the kit that you collected, all that evidence, they'll just like toss it because, well, I don't know if they like throw it in the trash can, but they're not going to move on with it because that's discredited. That was just two small examples of certain things they can do.
Maureen, what would you say is the most rewarding part of being a sane nurse? We've gone on about just how horrible it can be for obviously the victim, but everyone involved. Do you see a certain sense of fulfillment, or do you get like a gratifying feeling after the work you've done for this patient?
I think that knowing the care that I provide is the best care that they can receive in that environment makes it rewarding. And I feel that it's extremely important for sexual assault survivors to have the best possible experience that they can when they're in that hyperacute state of shock and trauma for that, whatever, 6 to 8 hour exam and with all the invasive things. You know, if I can be the person providing that, I feel that I can do my best to make them feel as safe as possible. And that is very rewarding.
Yeah, I think these patients would hopefully say about sane nurses and hopefully about the rest of their healthcare team that they played a very impactful part of their unfortunate circumstance, but it made that part of it a lot better in the sense that they could be that person that could alleviate their traumatic state.
Yeah. As the years go on, I always think in my head, like, oh, this will stop happening so much. But unfortunately, it happens way too frequently. So this is a job that has to exist. And if we can fill this job with people who understand trauma-informed care and who have the proper training, then that's the best thing we can do.
Yeah, to fill those shoes with the most qualified people like yourself and people that are in it for the right reasons.
Exactly.
So what do you think are some other things that physicians or healthcare providers should know about your work as a sane nurse or everything that's involved in that?
Yeah, I think a big thing is it's not our job to determine if an assault happened. It's our job to document the facts and the objective data and the injuries. You know, we're not there to determine the court case and, you know, you're not on anyone's side. Obviously, you're there to support the survivor and your patient. But what you're documenting is not correlating to what you think happened. So it's just important to include objective data and just facts in your charting. Another thing is, I think for healthcare providers who are, you know, going to be overseeing the care of the sane nurse, even if the sane nurse is taking control, you know, putting in orders, whatever, there is just kind of random things that I found, which I have sources for if needed. But I found the statistic that 50% of strangulation victims have no visible injury to their neck. So that's important just when you're trying to, rule out any vertebral artery dissections and ordering CAT scans and CTAs. The same nurse curriculum includes a lot about strangulation and how to recognize assessment parts that can tell you your patient was strangled. Obviously, they're gonna probably know, but even if there's no visible injury to the neck, it's something that you should ask your patient. Something else that has to do a lot with sexual assault is that I found this statistic as well, and we talk a lot about human trafficking in the realm of sexual assault. Most trafficked people accessed healthcare during the period that they were trafficked, primarily through ER departments. More than half not identified as trafficked by healthcare providers. So I think even when you're just asking, doing your basic interview, it's important to recognize red flags, which can be a lot of things like, seeking reproductive services, general psychological harm, things that are just kind of not sitting right with you. And it's important to just recognize those things. So, I don't know, those are just two random things that I think apply to physicians in general and healthcare providers, just to be mindful of.
Have you ever had a normal patient in the ER, and did you ever see signs of maybe assault or sexual assault or physical abuse that was kind of turned into a sane
Yeah,
case or?
absolutely. I think that a lot of times, for example, someone will come for STD screening. And, in the ER, we see that all the time. You get your tests and you give your prophylaxis. But like with my training, I go into the room and I make sure that I'm always asking gentle questions about if you had any non-consensual sex, or if you will need to, talk about anything else that pertains to this reproductive help that you're seeking. And I've had actually quite a bit of times when patients do kind of admit to something happening. And I think me asking them opens up a door that they may have been too fearful to pursue themselves. I think after working for a while in healthcare, you kind of get like spidey senses and you can kind of sense when something's off. And it's good to just follow that intuition and just open the door and ask that patient.
Have you ever witnessed a part of your team, such as a physician or another nurse, that maybe wasn't equipped to deal with the sexual assault patient? Or do you think that's something that every provider kind of has in their wheelhouse? Or do you think it's certain people are more capable of providing that trauma-informed care?
I think it's hard for providers nowadays because you get so busy and you just want to tackle the problem and move on. So it's hard for people to really sit there and maybe dive into a deeper problem. But I think everyone has the capacity to give that trauma-informed care.
What if they're not able to receive that information from the patient? Do you think there are providers that potentially have a very hard time dealing with and subsequently providing care for that patient just because of how visceral that case is?
Maybe if they've been through something themselves, or if they're maybe not prone to listening to someone. And I do think certain providers are better at it than others, trauma-informed care. But like we said earlier, I think it's a much more popular topic these days. And I think that physicians are thinking about it more.
So, do you have any resources for medical students or physicians or anyone else in healthcare that you would like to talk about in terms of providing care for sexual assault victims?
I actually found a statistic that said that 67% of medical programs included training on rape and 42% on working with survivors of sexual assault. And that's actually pretty decent, but it's not 100%. So I think a lot of medical schools aren't training their students on that specific population. Actually, in the survey that I just referenced, and an author on this survey is the Illinois SANE coordinator. Her name's Jacqueline Rodriguez, and she does all the didactic training. So I know this is credible, but she included a PowerPoint that they used in the survey to train the medical students and then like test their knowledge before and after. So that PowerPoint is in that article, and we can link that. A few links that they include in their appendix that give just a little insight into the training that might be helpful.
Nice. Okay. How does your work as a SANE nurse relate to your work in the ER? Because you see, I mean, with both realms, you're seeing the highest acuity of cases, and I can imagine that you draw a lot of similarities between the two. How do you compare the two, and is there one you like more than the other, or you see yourself in one area longer than the other?
Well, I think they're very different. With ER nursing, you have multiple patients at a time. It's all about priority management, anticipation of what you're doing. With SANE nursing, you have one patient for several hours, and your main focus is that person and the care you're giving them. I think that there are things to appreciate about both, but like I remember every single SANE patient that I take care of and their names and what happened, and I can't say the same for every single ER nurse that ER patient that I've taken care of. So I think that this kind of work sticks with you, and it is because of that emotional heaviness, just feeling what they're feeling and that kind of stuff you'll always remember and look back on and use in your future to help more sexual assault survivors.
So do you plan on continuing with this part of your career, or do you have any plans to stop at any time? I know you mentioned that once you get to a certain point, you can start being a forensics nurse in the court.
I could be an expert witness now, but when you've practiced for a few years, you can sit for your National SANE Board, I think it's called, and then you get like your ultimate certification.
What can they do technically that you cannot?
Actually nothing. We can do the same things. It's not really that you can perform more or perform less.
You're just more knowledgeable.
You're just, yeah. Experience. You're like Yoda. But it's a really hard test. So you really have to know your stuff, and it's recommended that you practice for several years before sitting to take that test.
So they're essentially the most experienced and therefore knowledgeable in the field.
Yeah, correct. And they may move into like educational roles or SANE coordinator roles, because every hospital system, I think, tries to have a SANE coordinator to just, you know, make sure that all runs smoothly, you know, implement an on-call program. So I think, yeah, when you get to the expert level, there are more opportunities in education and furthering your scope of practice.
Is there a physician counterpart to this SANE nurse title? Like, I don't know if that comes with the MD, or is there extra certifications that certain physicians can have that maybe they work in a capacity that a SANE nurse does, but at a different level or on serious cases?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure if how that works. I don't think that they can go through the same certification that a nurse goes through. But I know, like at North Shore, we have a doctor who liaisons the SANE nursing with the physicians. But I'm not sure if a physician can get the certification. That's a good question.
Well, that'll be something that our listeners can look into if they're curious. Because I'm sure there is.
Me too. I'm
sure there's 1,000 different certifications for 1,000 different things. Well, this has been great. I guess my last question would be, do you see a hopeful future for this sector of healthcare? From my point of view, it seems to be that trauma-informed care is becoming more prevalent and the training for such a thing is also becoming more prevalent. From your point of view, how does that look?
I think it looks hopeful. I think that sexual assault is unfortunately never going away and that people are realizing that and creating the best response to that epidemic. Healthcare and, you know, the legal system are working hand in hand to make this process as efficient and helpful to the survivor that it can be.
Yeah, I hope so too. And it seems like if we put our heads together, it can be a lot smoother and hopefully healing to the patient, because for such a heavy topic as this, I think everyone wants the same thing.
Agreed.
Maureen, we are definitely very thankful for the work you do. Everyone can do it. But you're right, we always will need people like you, sane nurses like you, providers that are responding empathetically, efficiently, and in working towards the best possible outcome for these patients. And I really do think you play a pivotal role in dozens, if not hundreds, of patients that have unfortunately been involved in this.
Yeah, and I think that all healthcare providers and physicians are able to play a role in making the healing process easier for people.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, Maureen.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course.
I feel honored.
And I think we'll have to have you back on the podcast to talk about your work in the emergency department.
Okay.
That's a whole other...
Whole other beast
that I would be happy
to delve into. That's a whole nother discussion.
But thank you, everyone, for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode. This wouldn't be possible without the support from our listeners. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate donations to help fund the production of this podcast. To support us, go to medicuspodcast.com, where you can additionally find show notes, links, and information about our guests. We are at Medicus Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please submit them on our website. This podcast is intended for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No patient-doctor relation is formed, and the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views and opinions are their own and do not represent any organization.